Hey, Steve. Hey, we're on the air right now. Not sure if you know that. So would you mind please putting down your boombox and taking a seat?
Yeah, let me get that over there. Sorry, Mark. I was just trying to get in the spirit for our next guest.
No, that's fine. I get it. It's a totally gnarly idea, but we got to get back to the show here.
It's a totally righteous idea, but I don't want to rush things, like Ferris said.
Life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it.
So, yeah, I hear what he's saying. I do not disagree, but, you know, we do kind of have to get things moving here. We're on a bit of a schedule.
Again, that's a good point. So I guess we're ready now to talk about the subject at hand, 80s teen movies. Kevin Smokler, in fact, has written a book about this. It's called Brat Pack America, A Love Letter to 80s Teen Movies and the Places They Happened. He'll be at Changing Hands Bookstore in Phoenix tonight to talk about it, but first, he talked with me and Mark, and I started by asking him about the settings of these movies, if they're actually kind of a character.
Most definitely. It is hard to imagine John Hughes's movies without Shermer, Illinois, the fictional North Chicago suburb that he created, only in so much as that John Hughes in The Breakfast Club and Ferris Bueller's Day Off and in 16 Candles, all of the movies we know and love that are written and directed by him, those movies are heavy on emotion and light on realism. I call them relatable as opposed to realistic. Most of us have fallen in love, had our hearts broken, had to graduate from high school or elementary school or college and leave our friends behind. Most of us have been through that experience. Very few of us have hijacked a German Day parade in downtown Chicago the way Ferris Bueller does, or served all-day detention the way they do in The Breakfast Club. So his movies were a combination of being relatable emotionally but fantasiful in terms of plot. And the place that those two things meet is this fictional place called Shermer, Illinois.
How do you compare teen movies from the 80s and teen movies that came after?
Not to sound too grand, but we are living in the pop culture ecosystem that the 80s teen movie created. And the radical change that the 80s teen movie pioneered was that the teenager in cinema was suddenly the center of their own story and were the people telling it, were both protagonist and narrator, which means they no longer represented anything other than themselves. That moment had come to pop music a generation before with the birth of rock and roll, and had come to American literature, really, I think, in 1952 with Catcher in the Rye. It comes to cinema in the 1980s. Beginning with Breaking Away in 1979, you have teenagers that are just human beings. And I think that is that seems like a foregone conclusion now, but that leads us directly into sort of the teen boom in movies and television we see in the 1990s, of course, with Beverly Hills 90210 and Buffy the Vampire Slayer. That leads us into sort of the John Green in literature and the Twilight and Hunger Games series. It leads us into the ginormous success of someone like Taylor Swift, who became famous telling the stories of teenage girls and saying that they are worth telling as human stories. That transformation in pop culture begins with the teen movies of the 1980s. There are plenty of great teen movies to follow, both in the 90s and in the 2000s and even today. They are all premised on this idea that the story of the teenager is the story of a certain kind of humanity, which frankly is a notion that simply did not exist before the 80s teen movie brought it into being.
And Kevin, the subtitle of your book, Brat Pack America, is a love letter to 80s teen movies. And I've wondered, is that love letter in one direction as opposed to the other direction? When you spoke to people who helped create some of the films, did they feel good about having been so influential in the lives of so many young people in that period? Or did they feel like, it was a job, I was glad I was doing it, but otherwise it didn't impact me the same way it did the viewers?
A little bit of both. To be fair, I did not want to sit any of these artists down and only talk about this one very narrow segment of their careers, even though that was the only segment that mattered for my book. What they did after this period was frankly just as interesting. The fact that Amy Heckerling made what could arguably be the defining teen movie of two separate decades, the 1980s with Fast Times at Ridgemont High and the 1990s with Clueless, is as much a part of her career than the part that's actually relevant to my book about 80s teen movies. Many of them were surprised by how much these movies have meant to people for as long as they have. Savage Steve Holland, who wrote and directed Better Off Dead, was 24 at the time and was kind of freshly out of art school, and the movie was not financially a success, and so and it's fame and renown didn't come along until much later, and really until HBO and home video made it such, and an entire generation of comedy writers look up to that movie as a model.
Kevin, I want to ask you about the music in a lot of these movies, and it seems to me at least that when I watch something like Breakfast Club or Back to the Future, some of those movies, the music in them is so classically 80s music. Like, you, even if you didn't see what was on the screen, listening to what the movie was playing, you would definitely know where you were. Was that something that you noticed, that the movies that you're talking about in this book, like the soundtracks of them, were very much of that era?
Yeah, it's actually something I've been talking about a bunch since the book came out. It is a huge part of the story of the 80s teen film is the music and the soundtracks that accompany them, and not the least of which is that these movies were kind of present at the birth of MTV and the consolidation of Top 40 radio and the rise of American college radio, to all of these external factors that were making the climate of music so interesting in the 1980s. I can see what you mean when you say they seem very much planted in that particular time. And yet they don't feel dated. You know, I don't listen to the Breakfast Club soundtrack and it doesn't feel like, you know, a bad pair of Jordache jeans that doesn't fit and whose cut hasn't been in fashion since 1985.
Kevin Smokler is the author of Brat Pack America, A Love Letter to 80s Teen Movies. He'll be in the Valley at Changing Hands in Phoenix coming up on Thursday, February the 2nd at 7 p.m. Kevin, thanks very much for joining us, and don't you forget about us, okay?
Well, we are not alone.